This is Jerry Bingham, host of Hush Loudly on WGN Plus.
You know, I think that there's the beauty in realizing that we don't need to change, actually, and feel like that we're at a deficit and that we need to fix something, but rather figuring out that when you play to your strengths, that's when you are at your best.
Hey, this is Dean Marshallin. You're listening to Hush Loudly on WGN.
Hi, this is Jerry Bingham. Welcome back to Hush Loudly, Introverts Redefined. I am so happy to be here. This is our 50th episode. This is our five-year anniversary. Started Hush Loudly November 2019. And I'm so proud and excited to be here 5 years later after having spoken to the most amazing introverts and extroverts on the topic of introversion, extroversion, leadership, socialization, and everything in between. So I am delighted to have a friend join today. His name is Dean Marshallin. And we are going to talk about a few things that I think all will be excited and interested to hear. But I'm just going to read a little bit about Dean to you now. So Dean is the manager for program development at Harvard Division of Continuing Education's Professional and Executive Development, where he collaborates with cross-functional teams to launch new and enhance existing executive education programs in areas such as business strategy, leadership, marketing, negotiations, and innovation. He leads the instructor onboarding process and manages the development of all new programs from concepts to launch. This year, Dean and his colleagues were honored with the Dean's Champions of Excellence Award for their work in launching Harvard's inaugural LGBTQ+ executive education program called LGBTQ+ Leadership Program, Leading with Pride. I absolutely love that name. In 2024, Dean was recognized on Hush Loudly's Game Changers Introverts to Watch list, which annually honors 30 influential and compelling introverted leaders worldwide. He holds a Master's of Education in Educational Leadership and Policy Studies, with a concentration in higher education administration from Boston University, and is currently pursuing graduate studies in business management at Harvard Extension School. In his spare time, Dean enjoys reading murder mysteries and participating in sports with Stonewall Sports, a community-based nonprofit for LGBTQ+ people and allies. Welcome, Dean, to Hush Loudly.
Thank you so much, Jerry. I'm so excited to be here and be speaking to you.
Me too. I'm so excited to have you here.
Congratulations on your five-year anniversary. That's awesome. I appreciate all the work you do.
Thank you. It's so exciting. So I first want to ask you, which I ask all of my guests, are you an introvert?
Absolutely. I don't think I would have known to call myself that, you know, until probably honestly, after college, I think, when I first got into my first professional job. But looking back, I can remember moments, I think, starting in high school where I was exhibiting introverted behaviors that at the time I called antisocial and yeah, gave myself that negative connotation, because I think that's what society sort of, you know, that's how it's presented. I remember I'd go in between classes in high school. We'd have 5 minutes to go from one class to the next with these, you know, 30 some students. And I always would put headphones in, always. And I needed to tune out and just listen to my own thoughts or music and get ready for the next class of 30 students. And, you know, just those like memories, little behaviors I did as I was younger sort of make sense to me now as I sort of rationalize, you know, what are my preferences today and how I function best.
I understand that. That resonates with me so much. And I want to ask you, putting on your headphones for the 5 minute break between classes. So do you think it was that you were focusing out, which I think that's what you said, or you were focusing in on whatever you were listening to? What was it that allows you to sort of recharge? Was it what you were listening to, or just the fact that you are not focused on school, you're focused on something else?
I think for me, it allowed me to tune out all the noise around me and really just be with myself and my thoughts for just those few minutes. Because, you know, schools, especially in America, are structured where it's an extroverted environment where you're forced to be around people all day, be in group work, doing all the like talking constantly. And, the, you know, and that's also how you're rewarded. And we see that translate into, I think, the workplace as well. But I remember that those were my 5 minutes where it was me time to just rejuvenate so I can be my best self or try to be my best self going into the next class or meeting, so to say, today in the work. So yeah, it was really about tuning out so I can focus on what I need to do to be my best self going into the next thing.
And when did you know the word introvert or put two and two together?
I didn't figure that out until, funny enough, the pandemic. And it, not that I would ever wish for that to come back again. However, it did give me a bit of an eye-opening experience that prior to the pandemic, I was working, as many of us were, 5 days a week in the office, surrounded by a lot of people. In my job at the time, I was managing undergraduate students and working closely with undergraduate students at BU, at Boston University. And I loved the work, but I was around students constantly. I was around other staff and colleagues constantly. And then once the pandemic hit, that fully stopped. We were full forced to work from home. And while I missed the people, I found myself doing some of my best work at home. It allowed me to concentrate in a way that I don't think I realized I needed, and allowed me to just be more productive, think more critically. I also found myself not as exhausted at the end of a week. COVID was exhausting for its own experiences, but in terms of just being able to like be on and give my fullest, that's what I discovered. I was like, I think this is a pattern. And that's how I discovered introversion, that was my space I needed. And then I actually looked forward to going into the office once we started transitioning, because like that was my one day, there were 2 days of the week to connect with people and socialize. But then immediately that was my cup. That was my limit. I was ready to go back home and, you know, keep doing my work the way I needed to do to make sure it was the best thing that I could produce.
I love that. That's very interesting. And every introvert that I've spoken to talks about how they were impacted by the pandemic. Not those who just discovered like you, but those that I know were already introverts. And we all talked about how we blossomed, how we excelled, how that time away from the office and away from others allowed us to do more, produce more, because we could create our own environment, our own space. So whatever you do in your house, whatever you need in terms of the temperature, the lighting, the noise, whatever's around you to help you be more creative and more productive, you were able to create that and have no distractions. I mean, people, you may have your family, the dog, and those kinds of distractions, but you were always already used to managing those distractions, not like the four people that come in your office between 8 and 12 to chat or to just bring up a subject and just take you sort of off your game for a couple of minutes. So we all talked about what we got out of the pandemic and what we learned about ourselves before we go back to work and go back to school. So this leads me to kind of another question. You kind of mentioned how we all kind of had that negative sort of look at ourselves when we realized when we were younger that we didn't fit in the way that our other classmates and friends fit in. And so you kind of look at yourself in a negative sense. You think, oh, I'm just antisocial. There's something wrong with me. I don't like this. I don't like that. When there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of us that make those choices. We just have preferences. But as you know, it leads into the workplace. Or that has been my experience and many introverts' experiences, because we do live in a world that celebrates and rewards and sometimes prefers the extroverted personality type, the more animated, the more gregarious, the more outgoing, the more out loud that person is. It seems to be really celebrated. And when you don't fit into any of those molds, you kind of feel like you may not be seen in the same way. You may not be seen as a leader, and you may be a born leader. And I like talking about with people like you who are in positions where you're making things happen, you're making an impact. So you're creating programs and supporting programs and being a part of things, especially tied to leadership, which is interesting. And that's how we met. So we met a few years ago. What year was it?
It was June of 2022.
Okay, so we met 2 years ago when there was this program that Harvard was offering, and it was Introverts as Leaders. What's the name of it? What was it called?
Yeah, it's Introverts as Leaders, Quiet Power as a Leadership Strength.
Okay, and so it was just appealing to me. So I took it, met Dean, and it was a room full of, I'll say, probably very intelligent people from all over the world. I remember there were people from, I don't remember those guys were from Russia. It was people from all over the place who were there as part of this program from the military. I remember it was some guy where he couldn't even tell us sort of his, like, I don't know what he did, but whatever it was, he was almost like, if I have to tell you, I have to kill you. He didn't say that. It was very clear that he was up high in some form of government. And I don't remember if he worked at the Pentagon, but that fascinated me too, because I feel like we are all over the place at the tops of our games and hitting it, knocking it out the park, doing well. But the world, the society, I think, would assume that the more extroverted personality is a leader. So what do you think about all that? I see you shaking your head, but what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I resonate with all of it. And, you know, I think as introverts were, and I say this, I mean, I imagine others might as well, is that, you know, we're not always the best at maybe recognizing our strengths or rather talking about them. Because again, we're surrounded by this idea that, oh, we need to strive for extroversion. We need to strive for being out loud because that's what's celebrated. And so there's always this feeling that, oh, we're the ones that need to change. We're the ones that need to pivot our skill set. So we need to learn how to public speak, or we need to learn how to be ready to be in that board meeting in 2 minutes and have your notes prepped and be done. Kind of respond in the moment and be on your game. And that's just not how we work. And, you know, we can flex. I like that term versus like we flex to extroversion when we need to. And like we can do it and we have to do it in our jobs and in personal lives at times too. But, you know, I think that there's the beauty in realizing that we don't need to change actually and feel like that we're at a deficit and that we need to fix something, but rather figuring out that when you play to your strengths, that's when you are at your best. And how you can be your best self. And so realizing that we were in a room, I think, with like 20 other really cool introverted people doing really cool things around the world. That's a really magical experience that you don't get to see, because again, introversion is not something you wear unless you wear it on your shirt or something. Like, you're not necessarily seeing it right away. It takes a little time to get familiar with people's preferences and how they work. And so when you get to be in a room with people and talk about those things, because again, we don't really talk about it, it's sort of that magical experience. And it makes you think, oh, wait, no, we're not, there's nothing to fix here. We have things that we can talk about and flex. And I think part of it that unfortunately maybe it is the burden on us is we just have to educate people that this is how we work. And it just takes a little bit of time to do that. But if you're willing to do that, you know, you can see people sort of, you know, adjust around you. If you have extroverted folks around you who want to better understand you. And I think that's the goal.
Well said. And that's what I'm always talking to our introverts, our introvert allies, because we need them. We work well with extroverts. There's always a beautiful balance. They're risk takers. We're risk averse. It makes perfect sense, especially in the workplace, to be balanced in teams in that way. And then those extroverts can also be our biggest champions. And that's something that I find that I do. I remember my friend Richard Etienne saying that, who's in London. He said how when he has to share news, and he might be uncomfortable, something kind of, you said, like, we don't really toot our horns and we might be doing some amazing things. He said he'll tell his BFF extrovert friend at work. And guess what? They are a champion and a cheerleader. They're going to tell everybody. So all he has to do is sit back. He'll tell that one lady. It'll spread the word. She's so proud. And then it's like all his promotion is out there and done, which is brilliant, which I think some of us probably do, but didn't really even realize it in that way. And so, but the extroverted personality typically has no problem promoting what they do. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just something that I think maybe even goes, this might be deep seated, where we still feel like maybe, you know, we are less than, or we're not this. And so we maybe don't talk about ourselves as much as we should. Or I guess maybe it's just innate. Maybe it's just we aren't that way.
It's like we don't necessarily want to be the center of attention. You know, we don't want to be in the spotlight. I know a lot of introverts we love to do that work behind the scenes and see what comes of it. But, you know, we don't necessarily want to put our name on blast about it. But I think you're right. Like having those extroverted friends around you, and my partner is so good about that. They're like, he's like, you need to celebrate yourself more and toot your own horn, and I'll do it for you if I have to. So you need people like that.
I love that. Yes. I also wanted to talk about, and this is related to the class that I mentioned or the course that I mentioned in your bio. I wanted to talk about the intersection. And so you and I have had serious conversations about this, and how when you are introverted, there's already one sort of negative feeling thing or perspective about you as people misperceive who you are. They just automatically judge, and the judgment seems to be negative because you are more reserved and not behaving in the way that they expect more extroverted. So that's when all of their judgment begins, like, oh, well, what's wrong with her? Does she not want to be here? Does he not want to be here? You know, are they not happy? Are they depressed? What is the problem? And then what we experience with our other marginalized identities. So for me, as a Black woman, I think that at first, when you can't read me because I'm an introvert and I'm told I have a poker face, I didn't ever think that, but I'm told it so often that I guess it must be true. So you can't read me because of my introversion. Then you tie in the fact that I am of African descent. And I believe that that's when the bias comes in, as your brain just automatically kind of comes up with a quick way to sum up who you are. And so what that has transpired into for me is that all of their associations with Black women, positive or negative, are kind of lumped in on me. And so because I'm not living my life out loud, they may think, oh, she's like the mean lady I know at the post office, or she's like whatever, maybe she's not as smart, or maybe she is just not engaged and not interested. And so all of these, which are stereotypes, come into play. And the problem with that is it could hinder my ability to elevate. It could hinder my ability to be considered for promotions, bonuses, opportunities, all because of a misperception where you are judging a book by its cover and not really getting to know me or giving me the opportunity to show who I am. So I wanted to know if you could talk about your feelings about this, what you felt about this in your area.
Yeah, no, thanks, Jerry. So as an introverted gay man, I think one of the challenges that I've found with, you know, the intersectionality of these identities is, you know, the LGBTQ, there's this expectation when like visibility that comes with being LGBTQ and being proud of that. And like, and not, it's not to say that I'm not, but there's this expectation that you want to celebrate all the time, and that there's this pressure to perform, I guess I would say. And so it feels like there's sort of this societal expectation that if there's a social event with, you know, LGBTQ plus colleagues or with your friend group that you're connected with, like you always have to be on and go and, you know, hang out. And there's good reason for why that is, because, you know, when you come out, you're trying to find your people now after going through that own experience. And so there's such excitement around that as young adults and even in older adults to come together as the LGBTQ community, because again, just like introversion, it's not obvious necessarily who is in that community and who isn't. And so while that's beautiful and I enjoy that, there is that pressure that I feel to perform. And I often get misperceived as well, or assumed that because I'm a gay man, I'm going to be loud, I'm going to be flamboyant, I'm going to be the center of attention. And that is so the opposite of who I am. I remember early on into a position, I was being provided feedback that sort of advised me to you know, make sure that I don't overtake certain conversations, or that I make sure I'm giving, you know, other people a chance to speak. And this is prior to me really having done anything. I think it was like week two. And I was a little confused because I was like, I hear you and I agree with you, but I guess I didn't, did I do something that prompted this feedback so early? And it was more about just this assumption that I was an extrovert. And they, you know, it wasn't explicit, but I sort of put the dots together in my head that I was like, oh, so, and they knew I was gay. So, you know, there was this sort of assumption that, oh, I'm gay. And I think they had previous experiences with other gay men. And maybe that just similarly, it's like, once you have one experience with someone, you might lock that in. And that's who that all these people are like. And so I had to break down and, you know, kind of that conversation and say, like, you know, just because that's who they are does not define who I am. And that'll be the last thing you have to worry about, is me being in the spotlight. I can tell you that.
And so that's exactly what I'm talking about, that implicit bias, that unconscious bias, where they make assumptions based on their previous experience. And same thing with back to me and the black thing. It's like when they see, and I feel like a lot of these come from media, from TV. And so what they've seen, so just like with black women, either you see, like, you may see a really comedic, funny, hilarious, outgoing, highly energetic. I'm not that. You know, or you see the mean, I'm none of that. And so I think people are expecting that. And as you were talking, I was thinking about another friend who had talked about how people see Modern Family, the wonderful show we all love, hilarious. And those people that they see, those characters, like Mitch and Cam, the gay couple. And I think that the expectation is, well, why isn't Dean like that? This is what we're looking for, you know, that definitely outward and all of that kind of stuff. And it's unfortunate because every person is different and has different talents to bring to the table. And this all even goes back to that whole conversation on diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And I just really hope that with us having these conversations, you being a part of programs like the one that was created at Harvard, and just us out here having conversations, that we will be able to move the needle. I think that even hearing it amongst ourselves, it's like whenever I talk to someone and they're like, oh my God, that's it. You know, if I'm bringing up this conversation about the intersection, and then it's like, that's what it is. And so I love being able to sort of educate and empower. And then we just have to educate the world about what we're doing. And I wonder, I would like to go back to the courses that are at Harvard. So do you know the one on the LGBTQ plus, how that came to be? Or, you know, do you know anything about that? Or I want to know that, too. Like, I think the introvert class, I asked you about that and you said it continues to meet its goals for enrollment or continues to have a certain number of people. And that makes me so happy. And I hope the same for the new program.
Yeah. So, and I'll add on to that real quick and say, you know, Harvard's known for leadership, and like, we really dive into different facets of leadership and making sure that folks like introverts and women and, you know, now LGBTQ folks, that again, you're leaning into your strength, but we're also unique in that we have to approach things a little bit differently. And we can't talk about leadership as a monolithic topic that is going to apply in the same way to everybody. And so it's, you know, the introverts program is doing phenomenally well. It always gets great reviews and people get excited about it. The joke is when that program's on campus, it's very quiet. And I don't take offense to that. I think that's the beauty of it. Like that's the really awesome thing to see. And during lunch breaks, they'll kind of just go off and do their thing. And like, yeah, but we've created an environment where that is safe to do and they should feel good about that. And like, that's what you do. And so the LGBTQ program, one of the, you know, our initiatives in our office was to really just better serve, you know, diverse niche populations. Like I said, making sure leadership is approached differently for different audiences. And you know, we're always brainstorming new ideas for new programming and ways to reach those audiences. And so we had considered doing, this was about 2 years ago, a program for LGBTQ plus leaders. We had just launched the introverts program. We have a women's program that does phenomenally well. And so after kind of reviewing what's out there, there's hardly anything about LGBTQ plus leadership. There was only one other program that we had seen. And we thought, you know, it's like, we have the expertise. We know a lot of connections. We have connections. And I think we thought we could be able to launch a program in this area. and specialize it for LGBTQ plus leaders. And so we partnered with one of our instructors who we already knew and built out a program. It's 4 days and we hired other instructors in the area who are in the community. So that's the beauty of it. It's taught fully by LGBTQ plus instructors. And we also have a panel discussion with a local LGBTQ plus leaders doing really cool things in the Boston area. So it just helps with that networking piece as well. But, you know, we wanted it to be a place where the motivations for it really were to even the playing field for professional opportunities for LGBTQ plus leaders. I think just like you said, with introverts, think about, you know, if we're seen as a deficit and we approach it that way, that really can hinder us for promotions. It can hinder us for, you know, advocating for ourselves. And I think for LGBTQ plus leaders, there are similar issues there. And I would say the same also for women. And that's why we have these programs to really empower them to connect with other people, lean into your strengths, but also know how to talk about it in a way that works for you. And then be able to think about how you can strategically contribute to your organization in a way that is effective for what you need to be. So we just launched that program in over the summer in July and had our first cohort, and it was very successful. And we're proud to be running it again next year as well.
Very cool. Very cool. And I hope that you and other institutions get on the bandwagon and do that, because it's so needed. And I love the whole, like you said, deficit, anti-deficit thinking. That's where we need to be. We're not thinking that way anymore. Well, that is about all the time that we have for today, Dean. Thank you. I have enjoyed this immensely, and I'm so excited that you are my 50th guest for my 5-year anniversary of Hush Loudly. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm honored today, Jerry. Thank you so much.
Enjoying Hush Loudly? Please subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to us. Did you know Hush Loudly has t-shirts? Yep, show the world you're an introvert without saying a word. We also have t-shirts for the extroverts in our lives who need us. Go to hushloudly.com/shop.